Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guests today are Ja Realidad, currently located in the archipelago, so-called Philippines. He's a community organizer promoting the idea of nonviolent direct action and community defense. He's also running an autonomous space he calls Pirate Studio, where he creates and produces short films or documentaries, does podcasts, runs a community library, offering free workshops or skill sharing, practices growing his own food to breed radical consciousness and promoting creative resistance. Also with us today is Jed Lefthander. He's a member of the local coalition called Negros Environment Watch, also in Food Not Bombs, and he lives in Bacolod City, and that's in the Philippines also, so-called Philippines. So first off, thank you both for your work in the world, and second, thank you for being in the program.
Thank you so much for inviting us to be part of this program, Derek.
Thank you very much, Derek, for inviting us on your program.
Oh, thank you. Can you just talk a little bit, introduce people to the fact that the Philippines have been invaded by many times? I mean, at least I know of the Spanish, the United States, and the Japanese, and that must speak to very much the resilience of the people to have survived that, and to survive that with relatively or somewhat, at least remotely, intact cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So anything you want to say about that, that'd be great.
Well, on the time the Spanish colonized archipelago, resistance becomes something natural, especially on our ancestor. And even after that, on the time of United States invasion, resistance still happening in the country, and even on Japanese time. And then they declared that, you know, Philippines will become an independent country, but the truth is it's not totally independent, but we are colonized in the aspect of economy or product, which is the neo-colonial, you know, aspect. So until now, that is one of the main reasons why archipelago are still exploited by these countries led by United States and, you know, some other imperial countries like China. So resistance is something natural. It's something natural that's happening here, you know, in the archipelago, but at the same time, there are a lot of factors why resistance, you know, why the system can maintain into the mid, how can I say this, but, you know, people can't even resist fully because of the existing system, because this system is so very dominating to the fact that, you know, they can kill you if you're, you know, against their operations. The state can use their state agent. You know, the companies have their own, you know, they can hire their own private army, or they can create their own private army to protect their businesses. And, it always led to the, you know, to violence. So that's why if we will check the data, the Philippines is ranked second deadliest country in the world for people defending the environment with 43 killings in 2019. And that is based on the London-based environmental watchdog. Witness said it is in the latest report way back in July 29 of 2020. But as for mining, 16 killings were recorded. So the country ranked first in 2018, overtaking Brazil with 30 deaths. The top spot for 2019 was taken by Colombia with 64 defenders killed. And criminalizing activists is a major concern in the country that led to the death of these defenders. Individual activists and environmental organizations have been accused of being rebels or communist sympathizers. And that is a practice commonly known as red tagging. So Global Witness also noted that almost half of the reported killings since the start of current administration are linked to armed forces who mostly live in resource-rich regions, like especially in Mindanao and Visayas region. So, moreover, many defenders killed in 2019 live in Mindanao, a trend it has observed since the start of the administration, the current administration, as well as in Negros, which is Jet's area, which is also considered to be a heavily militarized region in the country. So, it is noted that defenders living in both regions account for 90% of activists killed, while indigenous groups are also being forced to leave their land. That's why displacement in our indigenous people was also part of this, of this destructive mining activities. And with this global witness call for the Philippine government to ensure accountability through independent investigation of the attacks and to remove military units in indigenous land, it is also pushing for policy to repeal the Anti-Terrorist Act of 2020, which is already a law right now, the Anti-Terrorist Law. And total killings for 2019 reached 212, or an average of 4 people killed a week. Mining was the deadliest sector with 50 people killed. And recently, last 2 weeks ago, another activist was shot by the unknown riding in tandem around 1 p.m. last April 15 of this year. And that was happened in Negros province on Jet's area. I do believe he is actively working in urban poor communities, and I do believe he's involved fighting on the black sand mining on that specific area. At the same time, last April 14 of this year, Duterte lifted the 9 years ban of new mining deals, and he said that the country had tapped less than 5% of its mineral resources endowment. This suggests that there's still room for new mining projects. So as you can see, the current administration are really open for those companies to exploit the natural resources here in archipelago. And so from tons of destructive activities, you know, from mining, quarrying, from logging, from fracking, which is very unsafe to those communities living nearby on site, it has also become unsafe country for those individuals who's fighting to protect the natural world. And it's so sad that we need to fight our own government to protect our environment and the natural world to those greed corporations who's raping our planet just for the sake of profit. And that's why resistance become necessity in our time. But at the same time, just like what I said, if you will choose to resist, the consequences of that is it is possible for you to be killed, you know, by different forces, by the state agent or from the private army of those corporations. But still, on our history, many individual groups, collectives, or organizations still choose to fight this destructive activities, these great corporations who's destroying our land, our mountain, our forest, our river, and our ocean. And I think I do believe we don't deserve to lose this battle. That's because, you know, we're not fighting for a better tomorrow, but we are fighting for the sake of the next generation. And I do believe that's the main reason why Jed and the rest of the Korean Negros are doing their own action to save the Negros forest. And I do believe Jed will share what is the exact things happening on their area and how they defend their struggles. What are their struggles and their ongoing campaign to save the remaining forests of that region.
Yeah, in line with Ja said, like 3 weeks ago, one activist had been killed exactly here in my area. It's like 2 kilometers away from our collective space. So in our end, it's really very scary. We feel insecure all the time. The reason that I am moving one place to another almost every week. And because of the environmental campaigns that we are doing also, it's very dangerous. because of one of the big reasons right now is we are trying to stop the black sand mining here in Negros Island. Because in the middle of the pandemic, while everybody's in their house on lockdown, our government and the two mining company already started the black sand mining. So it's very questionable because in the middle of the pandemic, they issued an ECC or an environmental compliance certificate. So according to the official folks on the area, the black sand mining is already affecting their livelihood because the main the exact location of the black sand mining happening is in EB Magalona. So it's a small town. That town is very famous in exporting blue water crabs. So the main concern of the fisher folks, if this black sand mining won't stop, it will be the death of their livelihood. And right now, my comrades in Negros Environment Watch, we are trying to approach the local government, but obviously it is very hard for us. It's because they already complied. The company already complied with ACC, and we are having hard time trying to reach out the local government. I know Jack will understand how hard for us environmental activists to approach these politicians, because it's very easy for them to bypass the law, especially the environmental law, if these people are already been paid. So not only the local city mayor, but we are also trying to talk to the local community leaders, but these community leaders are already been blinded, and because of obviously we know the reason what they what are keeping their mouth shut. But our major concern here is this people, this the fisher folks are approaching us to protect them. So what we are doing right now is we're filing an opposition, and we are trying to build and look for volunteers like academics, like marine biologists to be exact. So in order for us to prove that the black sand mining is really happening, our coalition is are suggesting to put up a third party research. But one of the reason that it's delaying right now, because we are trying hard time to look for a marine biologist to help us, but we are asking also marine biology students to help us about it. We only need enough fund so we can fund this third party research. Also, in talking about the Northern Negros Natural Park, so one of the reasons that the remaining mountains is currently deteriorating because of the so-called green tourism. 5 years, I think 10 years ago, there were so many mountain resorts opened in Northern Negros Natural Park. So I would just give you a background of Northern Negros Natural Park. These the Negros Mountains is also our watershed and a protected area. So it is very questionable because it is a protected area, but there is so many illegal structures right now. I'm talking about big resorts, like a hotel type resort in the top of the mountains. One of the reasons that we cannot shut them down immediately because most of these resorts and private rest house are owned by the families of politicians. So that's the one of the major problems that we are facing right now. The only thing that we can win this battle is through legal process, and through legal process, we would need like solid research, and also in the Philippines, the legal system here is sometimes is not sometimes, but it's very frustrating. I think it will took us like at least 5 or 10 years to win this battle. Also, one of the issue also in the Negros Mountains right now, because in the midst of pandemic, the government, the Department of Public Highways, started cutting trees in the top of the mountains because they are making a road for like 6 cities. They want to put up an access road in the middle of the mountains. So it is very destructive because the Northern Negros is home of the so much endemic species, and also it is a watershed. So if this road construction will not stop, I think it will just be the end of us because it's a watershed. It's a protected area. One of the reasons that they want to put up a road there, it's because they want the economy or the commerce, the commercial transport to be faster because it will connect 6 or 5 cities, Sagay City, Cadiz, Calatrava, Silay, going to Don Salvador Benedicto. It is very frustrating because in the midst of pandemic, while everybody is on their homes and lockdown, trying to survive, our government is taking this opportunity to give permits to the mining company, the road construction, and also last I think 4 days ago, there is a wildfire happened in the Northern Negros Mountains. But there is this just this morning, there is a speculations that it is not a wildfire. Some of the people on the ground speculate that the fire happened because of one of the big names in politics already bought the land, and I don't know, maybe they want to put an illegal structure also, because on that part of Northern Negros, I think they have like more than 30 cafes in the mountains already. So it's very questionable, and it's very frustrating right now.
Thanks so
thank
that,
yeah, thank you for that. I know this is not the main point, but what's the black sand used for?
That is a good question, Gary. Well, black sand mining is also happening even in the northern part of the archipelago, and one of the main products of this industry is a glass.
Okay.
I can answer that also. Black sand mining is used to make steel and also magnets aside from glass. And I just wanted to add that the black sand, here in Negros, it's called margaha. It is the food source of the blue swimming crabs. So if all the black sand will be extracted, it will be the death of the blue crabs because their food source will be gone. And it will be the collapse also of the other species in the ocean.
So as you can see, Derek, what's happening in Negros is only a product of this economic-centered government or system, which is based, where the progress is always based on development that led to environmental destructions. Especially right now, I just want to share, that the current administration had their own centerpiece program, which is called the BBB or the Build, Build, Build. So this program is a centerpiece program of the Duterte administration that aims to usher the golden age of infrastructure here in the Philippines. So this will cost around 8 trillion to 9 trillion from 2016 to 2022 to address the huge infrastructure backlog in the country. So aside from the mega airport project in Bulacan, where this project will displace around 700 families of fisher folks families, they also destroy those mangroves on that area. And aside on that project, one of their projects is the Manila Rehabilitation Program. And the aim of this project is to make Manila Bay more presentable or beautiful, in the eye of the people. But to be honest, that's for the investor, to the eye of investor. So what they did, especially during the pandemic, the government used the pandemic to advance their agendas, because this administration are not taking COVID as a health concern or health issue, but instead they're taking this as a peace and order concern. That's why, especially last year, on the first quarter of pandemic, instead of providing or sending health workers and community, what did they do is they send militaries and police to intimidate people. And they use that COVID-19 to advance their, their agendas. If people are not aware, last year, and even in the middle of pandemic, mining operation, logging, black sand mining started happening, even on the mid of the lockdown of pandemic. So even in the Metro Manila project, they tried to put artificial white sand, which they call dolomite, and based on the research, dolomite is something not safe, to the health of people, and it could cause cancer. But still, they put that dolomite in Manila Bay to make an artificial, white sand bay. But the thing is, people need to know that that dolomite is coming from Cebu province, where there is a mining, there's a mining industry of dolomite on that area, and they get that dolomite or that artificial white sand from that mining site in Cebu, where it badly damaged the marine ecology of that area. And I think environmental destruction will not stop even after this administration, because the Build program was here, and almost the local governments on the archipelago, they are trying to to follow this program, where it is based on development, and we are not, it is not easy for us that the consequences of that aggressive development will always lead to violence, to environmental destruction, and to displacement of our indigenous people.
I want to come back to the violence in a moment, but I'm sorry if this is a stupid question, but why did they want to put white sand in the bay? What's the point?
It is because it is part of the program of Manila Rehabilitation Program. So the Manila Rehabilitation Program is they want to make Manila Bay become more beautiful in the eye of the people. And one of their project is to replace this black sand into white sand, to, you know, artificial white sand. And they're doing that because the mega airport who's part of Manila Bay in the province of Bulacan is connected here. Okay, so they are doing that to invite investor for that specific area.
I'm sorry, that just seems crazy to me.
Well, that's happening and until now it's happening.
Okay. That just seems ridiculous. Go ahead.
And it costs billion. In line about the Dolomite, it costs like more than
134 million. I'm so sorry, but let me double check that.
It costs like 100 million. It's crazy.
And sand in the ocean gets carried away.
Yes, that's in fact the Philippines is we experience like at least 15 or 20 typhoons every year, so it will just wash away anytime.
It is right, and I'm so sorry for the numbers. The total the cost of that that project for the Dolomite sand is around 28 million.
Thank you for all that. I want to go back to, can you say again how many activists were killed in the last year, the year before?
That is based on Environmental Watchdog. Let me check that again. So...
I would like to speak about that.
Yes, please.
But just this year, I think here in my area, it was, I think more or less, from February to April, I think like 3 killings from activists already.
Yeah. And, based on the data, the total killings for 2019 reached around 212. Or an average of 4 people killed in a week. And mining was the deadliest sector with 50 people killed.
So just to be clear, you're not talking about mining accidents, you're talking about murders.
Well, yes. Because yes. This activist or this defenders or this simple individual who just wants to protect their community has been killed because of they just want to protect their community on those mining companies.
So if there's 200 people killed, what would be an estimate for the number of people beaten or otherwise terrorized?
That is a good question, but to be honest, I don't have any exact data about that, because usually if you're an activist here, they will not beaten you, but instead they will just shot you right away on your head. They're just going to put a bullet on your head right away instead of doing that.
So this
especially
is
especially if they identify that you're one of the leader of those groups, or if you're a community organizer, if they know that you're one of the leading individual to fight the mining companies here in archipelago, then you are targeted to be killed right away.
So I have a great go ahead please
from farmers Jeff. They're killing like not only activists but also farmer leaders, indigenous people, even students that speak out about it.
So, I have great respect for the people in the United States who will speak out at risk of losing their jobs or getting deplatformed or losing their publishing contracts. But that's nothing compared to the courage of you and your fellow activists there who are not worried about, I mean, it's not so much losing your job, but losing your life. That's just
yeah.
extraordinary. I'm in awe of your courage for to even speak about this.
I just wanted to share that a couple of months ago, Derek, I already experienced the death threat. That's why that's the reason I keep on moving.
Yeah. And I think I want to acknowledge, you know, I want to acknowledge you, Derek, for, you know, about what doing of the people here in Archipelago. But I think that is not extraordinary thing, because sometimes people have no choice but to fight and to resist. Because even if you will not fight, you get killed because of those operations of the mining industry. If way back in 2014 in the province of Mindoro, there are some tribes they called Mangyan, and what they're doing for a living is they go fishing on their rivers, they do farming, but you know, one time this company, a hydropower plant company, came on their area and do the operation. And because of that, a typhoon, you know, came after a month, and because they are digging their mountains, those soils coming from the operation killed their rivers and killed, you know, those rice fields. And because of that, they can't, you know, plant their own food. They can't get any food from the river because it was killed by this, by those, hydropower plant company. So even if you're not resisting, you've been killed because of the effect of those destruction of the, companies. So sometimes people are resisting or fighting because they are too brave, but I think sometimes there are no choice. And, you know, the last option that they have is to resist, because resistance on that situation, you will see that resistance become necessity. And it's so sad that sometimes, you know, you can't run to your government and ask for protection, because this agency are the one who gives permit to these companies to operate and to exploit the natural resources of that community.
I agree.
So, is there ever any accountability for the people who kill the activists? Are they ever held to account by any sort of legal or judicial means? I'm guessing no, but I want to ask.
Based on my experience, I cannot remember that the state here prioritized those killings. But if there are, you know, there are specific concerns or certain scenarios that it always happened, you know, there's killing, it is the private group, the NGO, the environmental group, who stand and, you know, who always seek for justice. But the government, based on my experience, I never see that this state or this government, our government, prioritize to protect those defenders.
Yeah, same with me. I can't remember because there were none, I guess.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, we're still here.
Okay. So what is the path in your experience of a lot of people who become, activists? Is it typically, or are they all over the map, or is it typically like you were talking about the fisher folk who are going to lose their living, or the people who lived on the river? Is that where a lot of it comes, or does a lot of it come through you mentioned students earlier too. Is it all across various sectors of society that the resistors emerge from, or have you seen patterns of people primarily who are personally having their lives destroyed?
I can say it is very broad activism, but very broad. You know, in different sectors, you can see activism or resistance from the sector of youth, from farmers to workers, women's, and in different, you know, indigenous people. You can see a resistance from this sectors or from this group of people.
So you have talked a little bit about this administration, but you also said that you didn't want to specifically blame this administration, because previous administrations had also been pushing these infrastructure projects. So do you see, how do you see that playing out in the sort of midterm future? Do you see the government continuing to push even harder for these infrastructure projects, or do you see any sort of turning that around?
Yeah, I can see that this project will proceed, and it will become much worse because the design of our system are based from the Western countries. So the tendency of this even after this administration, even the next administration, Javier will get the political powers, they will do the same thing, because it is our system was designed by Western countries like United States, and United States have a big participation when it comes to this environmental destruction in the country. We're still under by this countries who colonize us in the, you know, in the form of economy. So I cannot say that this thing will happen in the next, you know, in the next decade. No, I think that it will not happen. As long as the people enjoy the luxury of this type of system, and people don't understand that the main roots of this environmental destruction is this cold thing, this thing that we call development, I think the rape in natural world or the destruction here in archipelago will never stop.
So thank you for that. And I've got a few more questions, but I want to go back to the cultural diversity that you mentioned early on. And does a wide range of cultures and languages make resistance to colonialism and development, does it make it more difficult or less difficult, or does it not have an effect really on resistance, the fact that there are so many cultures there?
Well, I can say there's always advantage and disadvantages because of that. That is a very good question. But if you'll ask me about that, I can say that there's always advantage and disadvantages because of this diversity.
So would it be worthwhile to go into, like briefly go into any of the advantages or disadvantages, or is that not so important?
Well, yeah. So we can use a good sample, the indigenous people in the northern part of Luzon, which is in Cordillera, which, they are the tribes that never been colonized by the Spanish, and that is because one of their culture is to be naturally warrior, you know. So if you're trying to invade their area, because they are warrior, then they will fight you right away and they will kill you. So that is one of the advantage. While on the other part, especially in Sierra Madre, we have a tribe there, we call that Dumagat. So Dumagat is not a warrior. They are a peacemaker. Even you colonize their, you know, their community, they will not fight you, but instead they will just move in another place. So, as you can see on that scenario, there's always advantage and disadvantages. I'm not saying that being a warrior is good and that being a warrior is bad. I'm not saying that, but there's something natural, and that is a diverse culture, especially on our Indigenous people here.
Right. Thank you for that. So we have about 10 minutes left, and there are some other questions that I want to ask, but one question I really want to ask right now is, how can people in the United States or in other of the colonial centers, people in China for that matter, what can they do to help the Philippines?
Oh, I think... Okay. It's a very tough question because something systematic, because, you know, we have the ASEAN. Philippines is part of the ASEAN. So, what about you, Jed? Jed, go first.
I don't know. It's a very tough question, but people in the first world could help us in terms of maybe unite to end the industrial civilization.
I think they can help us by they can condemn their own government if they know that they're, you know, a mining company is coming from China or from the United States are operating here, and we have an ongoing campaign. They can condemn these companies on their, you know, on the embassy, you know, of their area. For example, if one mining company from the United States are doing operations here, then we can ask for solidarity to condemn the companies on the on United States. And you can support those environmental defenders by providing support, especially for those grass organizers or grassroots organizer. They can help us in the form of legal aspect, if they will help us how to build a legal aspect which is focused to help those grassroots organizers. They can help us in the form of providing skill sharing or workshops, providing paralegal. There's so many ways that, you know, you guys can help us. But of course, the best help that we can get is to support the initiative or the local works of those grassroots organizers, like in the Network of Negros.
So, are there? Thank you for all that. And are there any other messages that you would like to? Anything else that you want to convey in this particular interview about your efforts, about what you're going through, about your love of the Philippines, anything else you want to convey?
Jed, think, go ahead.
I think one of my message also, in my area, the Philippines, Island, one of the destructive business are illegal structures. So,
Jed,
what?
Headground grounded yung ano mo. Ayan.
Hello, hello.
There we go. Go ahead. Yeah.
I think my message for the people outside the country, especially tourists, I think they can help us if I think they would boycott or not support this illegal structures or around or the so-called ecotourism. If they, I know that Philippines is a very beautiful archipelago, but one of the reasons also it is being developed because of these foreign investors, especially tourists. They invest a lot of money to put up big business on the beach and the mountains. I guess if they wanted to, if they're interested to help us out, I think before they invest on this tourism business, I think they need to do a research first. If the community or if their business is trying to affect our livelihood, our environment, and everything, because this business opening is attracting more more tourists and more foreign investors. That's it.
Okay. So, well, I just want to add that the biodiversity of archipelago was very inviting in the eye of investors, especially of those imperialist country like United States and China. But at the same time, it is important that we understand that it is our responsibility to defend our communities against from this destructive activities of these greed corporations. And activism is not something bad. People need to understand that, especially here in our context. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're a communist or any, you know, title that if you're doing that. I think we need to understand that in this generation, resistance become necessity. And it is not bad to fight our government because we're not fighting our government because we want to be a bad guy, you know, in the eye of the law. But I think we need to understand that it is our responsibility to protect the natural world, not for the sake of tomorrow, but for the sake of the next generation. And I do believe we don't deserve to lose this fight because we're doing this for the planet.
Well, thank you both so much for that. And thank you for your work in the world. And thank you for your courage. I mean very much what I say when I say I am in awe of both of you and of your courage. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guests today have been Jared Realidad and Jed Lefthander. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.